This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Waking Gods, Book 2 of the Themis Files, by Sylvain Nouvelle. Read for you by Andy Secombe, Adna Sablich, Laurel Lefko, Eric Myers, William Hope, Charlie Anson, Christopher Ragland, Karina Fernandez, Madeline Rose, Roy McMillan, Olivia Dowd, and Sarah Wells. Prologue. Personal journal entry. Eva Reyes.
Melissa made fun of me at school today. She's all about boys now. Enzo and his friends started calling me La Evita Loca again, and she joined in. She said, "Look, crazy Eva's gonna cry." I hate her. She was my last good friend. Angie goes to Baldwin now, and I hardly ever hear from her. Essie moved to Bayamon. They were the only ones I saw outside of school. Mom keeps telling me to get out more, but there's no one to play with. We used to look for rocks by Rio Piedras. Essie loves rocks, especially those blue ones. I think they call kyanite. I went by myself the other day, and I found tons of them. I told her I'd bring them when I visit, but I don't know when Mom will let me go. She says I have to get better first. I'm seeing that psychiatrist again tonight. He thinks I'm crazy, like everyone else. They keep telling me it's normal to have bad dreams. But I know they're not dreams. I have them when I'm awake now. I saw it again today at school. And I started screaming. It's the same one I've been having for months. Everyone is dead. There are thousands of them, dead on the streets. All city filled with corpses. I see my parents lying in blood inside our house. I haven't told them that part. Today, there was something new. I saw a robot, like Temis. A big metal woman falling into the clouds.
Part 1. Kith and Kin. File number 1398. News report. Jacob Lawson, BBC London. Location, Regent's Park, London, England.
A 20-story tall metallic figure appeared in the middle of Regent's Park this morning. Caretakers at the London Zoo were the first to notice it at around 4 a.m. Standing on one of the hub's football pitches at the north end of the park, the figure, or robot, bears a resemblance in both size and shape to the UN robot we now know as Themis. This new giant, however, appears to be a man, or shall I say, is made in the image of a man. It is much more muscular than the slender feminine titan that visited London less than a year ago, perhaps taller as well. Its colour is also different, a lighter grey than the UN robot, and it is striated with yellow light in contrast to the turquoise-veined Themis. According to early witnesses, the robot appeared out of thin air in the middle of the park. "It wasn't there, then it was," said one of the zookeepers. Fortunately, the football pitches at the hub were deserted at this hour, and not a single casualty has been reported. It is unknown, of course, whether this early appearance was deliberate, as we do not know where this robot came from or who sent it. If this is indeed a robot like Themis, and if it is controlled in the same manner as she is, there could be pilots aboard. If pilots there are they Russian, Japanese, or Chinese, or are they from somewhere else entirely? We can only speculate at this juncture. There might be no one at all in this giant structure. In the 4 hours it has been standing here, it has not moved an inch. The Earth Defence Corps, the EDC, has yet to issue an official statement. Dr. Rose Franklin, head of the scientific division, was reached in Geneva, where she was to give a speech later this morning. She would not speculate as to the origin of this second robot, but has assured us that it is not part of the UN planetary defence. If true, this would suggest that either a second alien robot has been discovered on Earth and kept from us, or that this one does not come from our planet. In New York, The EDC has scheduled a press conference for 3 o'clock London time. The Earth Defence Corps, which was founded 9 years ago by the United Nations following the American discovery of the Themis robot, is tasked with extracting new technologies from the alien artifact for the benefit of mankind and to protect this planet against extraterrestrial threats. Only time will tell if we are facing such a threat today. No word yet from His Majesty's government, but sources say the Prime Minister will address the nation within the hour. The British people will not have to wait to hear from the other side of the aisle. The official opposition was quick to issue a statement earlier today, immediately calling for the Prime Minister to offer some reassurance. Opposition leader Amanda Webb took to the air about an hour ago, saying, "There is an alien device with potentially devastating power standing in the middle of London, and all the Prime Minister has seen fit to do is to restrict access to one city park. Can he tell the 13 million people who live in the Greater London area that they are safe? If he can, he owes the British people an explanation, and if he can't, I, for one, would like to know why we aren't talking about evacuation." The former Foreign Secretary went on to suggest that central London be evacuated first, something that, by her calculation, could be accomplished in an orderly manner in less than 48 hours. Londoners, for their part, appear in no hurry to go anywhere. Perhaps as surprising as the robot's appearance is the utter nonchalance the population has displayed since. The towering figure is visible from most of London, and while one might expect civic unrest or a massive exodus from the city, Londoners, for the most part, have gone about their business. Many have even made their way towards Regent's Park to see this new Titan up close. The police have closed off the area south of Prince Albert and north of the A501 between the A41 and Albany Street, but some have managed to escape their attention and found their way into the park. The police even had to evacuate a family that was preparing for a picnic, a mere few steps from the giant metallic feet of the intruder. It's hard to blame Londoners for seeing a creature similar to Themis as a friendly figure. They have been told that a race of aliens left her on Earth for our protection. Her metal face and backwards legs are on the telly almost every day and have made the front page of every Red Top for nearly a decade. There are Themis T-shirts for sale on every corner, and young Londoners have grown up playing with Themis action figures. Themis is a star. Her visit to another one of London's royal parks a year ago felt more like a rock concert than first contact with something from an alien world. This is a defining moment in the short history of the EDC. The fruit of a very fragile coalition, the organisation has been called a public relations stunt by its detractors. Many have argued that a single robot, no matter how powerful, could not defend a planet against an invader. By adding a second robot to its arsenal, or forging a formal alliance with another race, the EDC would come a long way in silencing its critics.
File number 1399. Personal Journal Entry. Dr. Rose Franklin, Head of Science Division, Earth Defense Corps.
I had a cat. For some reason, no one remembers my having a cat. I've been picturing her curled into a ball on the kitchen floor, slowly starving to death while waiting for me to come home. I keep forgetting that Rose Franklin came home that night, that she, the other me, never left. I'm glad my cat didn't starve, but part of me wishes she'd waited for me by the door. I miss her. My apartment feels incredibly empty without her small presence. Maybe she died. She wasn't that old, though. Maybe I got rid of her when my job became too demanding. Maybe she didn't recognize the person who came home that night pretending to be me and ran away. I wish. She'd probably be afraid of me if she were still around. If there's a real Rose Franklin, chances are I'm not it. 13 years ago, I got into a traffic accident on my way to work. Strangers pulled me out of my car, and I woke up on the side of the road in Ireland 4 years later. I hadn't aged a day. How is that possible? Did I travel to the future? Was I frozen, cryogenized for 4 years? I'll probably never know. I can live with that. What I'm having a hard time dealing with is that I wasn't really gone for those 4 years. Someone like me anyway, was here. Rose Franklin went to work the next day. She did a whole bunch of things during those years. Somehow she ended up studying the giant metal hand I had fallen onto as a child. She became convinced that there were more giant body parts lying around and devised a method for unearthing them. She pieced together a giant alien robot called Themis. Then she died. It was a busy 4 years. I don't remember any of it, of course. I wasn't there. Whoever did all those things died. I know for a fact it wasn't me. Rose Franklin was 28 when she was put in charge of the research team studying the hand. She died at 30. A year later, they found me. I was 27. Themis ended up with the United Nations. They created a planetary defense branch called the EDC with the robot as its main asset. I wasn't there for that either. One of me had died. The other hadn't been found yet. They put me in charge of the EDC research team about a month after I reappeared. The other Rose must have made quite an impression because I was probably the least qualified person for the job. I had never even seen Themis. As far as I was concerned, the last time I had seen any part of her was on my 11th birthday. They didn't seem to care. Neither did I. I really wanted the job. I've been at it for 9 years. 9 years. One would think that would be enough time to get over what happened to me. It's not. I had 4 years of catching up to do, and that kept my mind busy for a while. But as I settled into some sort of routine, got more comfortable with my new job, my new life, I became more and more obsessed with who and what I am. I realized that if I did travel through time, I probably don't have the knowledge to fully understand it. But there shouldn't have been two of us. Move an object from point A to point B. Logic dictates you won't find it at point A anymore. Am I a clone? A copy? I can live without knowing what happened to me, but I have to know if I'm me. That's an awful thing to doubt. I know I don't belong here, now. I'm out of sync. It's a familiar feeling, now that I think about it. Every so often, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, I would get this anxiety rush. I'd usually be really tired, maybe had too much coffee, and I'd start feeling, oh, I never knew how to describe it. Every second that goes by feels like nails on a chalkboard. It usually lasts a minute or two, but it feels like you're just a tiny bit, half a second or so, out of sync with the universe. I was never able to really explain it, so I don't know if I'm the only one who ever felt this. I suppose not, but that's how I feel every minute of every day now. Only that half second is getting longer and longer. I have no real friends, no real relationships. The ones I have are based on experiences I didn't share, and the ones I lost have been damaged by events I didn't live through. My mother still calls me every other night. She doesn't understand that we hadn't spoken in over a year when I came back. How could she? She's calling that other person. The one who isn't still dealing with her father's loss. The one who everyone liked. The one who died. I haven't talked to any of my old friends from school, from home. They were at my funeral. That's such a perfect ending to a relationship, I wouldn't want to spoil that. Kara and Vincent are the closest things I have to friends now, but even after 9 years, I'm somewhat ashamed of our friendship. I'm an imposter. Their affection for me is based on a lie. They've told me what we supposedly went through together, and we all pretend that we would have shared the same experiences had the circumstances been different. We keep pretending I'm that other person, and they like me for it. I don't know what I am, but I know I'm not her. I'm trying to be. Desperately trying. I know that if I could just be her, everything would be all right. But I don't know her. I have gone over every page of her notes 1,000 times, and I still can't see the world as she did. I see glimpses of myself in some of her journal entries, but those fleeting moments aren't enough to bring us any closer. She was clever, though. I'm not certain I could do what she did if we were looking for giant body parts today. She must have found some research I don't know about. Probably something that was published while I was away. Maybe I'm an imperfect copy. Maybe she was just smarter. She certainly was more optimistic. She believed, was utterly convinced, that Themis was left here as a gift for us to find in due time. A coming-of-age present left to an adolescent race by a benevolent father figure. Yet they buried all the pieces in the far corners of the earth, in the most remote of places, even under the ice. I can see why I might get excited by a treasure hunt, but I can't find a good reason for the added hurdles. My gut tells me these things were hidden. Well, just that, hidden, as in not to be found. More than anything, I can't imagine why anyone, however advanced, would leave behind a robot that, in all likelihood, we wouldn't be able to use. Anyone with the technology to build one of these things and to travel light years to bring it here would have had the power to adapt the controls to our anatomy. They would have had a mechanic aboard, someone who could fix the robot, or at least MacGyver their way out of small problems. All it would really take is their version of a screwdriver to turn the knee braces around so we could use them. They couldn't have expected us to mutilate ourselves in order to pilot this thing. I'm a scientist, and I have no proof for any of this, but neither did the other Rose when she assumed the opposite. Without evidence, even Occam's razor should never have led me in that direction. The irony is that they built this entire program based on my findings. If I had told them how scared I am of what will come, they never would have given me the freedom to do what I'm doing now. The lab is the only place I find comfort in, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for Themis, to be in her company every day. I feel drawn to her. She isn't of this world either. She doesn't belong here any more than I do. We are both out of place and out of time, and the more I learn about her, the closer I feel to understanding what really happened to me. I know everyone is worried about me. My mother told me she would pray for me. You don't do that for someone who's doing great. I didn't want to upset her, so I said thank you. My faith has never been really strong, but even if it were, I know there's no God coming to help me. There's no redemption for what I've done. I should be dead. I died. I was brought back by what I assume is advanced technology, but you might as well call it witchcraft. Not too long ago, the church would have burned someone like me. I may believe in God, but I'm at war with him. I'm a scientist. I try to answer questions one at a time, so there's a little less room for him as the answer. I plant my flag, and inch by inch I take away his kingdom. It's odd. But none of this has ever occurred to me before. I never even saw a real contradiction between science and religion. I see it now. I see it clear as day. I've crossed that line we're not supposed to cross. I died, and I'm still here. I cheated death. I took away God's power. I killed God, and I feel empty inside.
File number 1408. Interview with Brigadier General Eugene Govender, Commander, Earth Defense Corps. Location, Waldorf Astoria Hotel, New York, New York.
You should hurry, Eugene.
How long have we known each other?
14 years this September.
14 years? And in all that time, have I ever once given you permission to call me Eugene?
A general seems inappropriate after what we've been through.
It does, doesn't it? Imagine how it feels to have absolutely nothing to call you.
Not that I do not enjoy hearing you ramble endlessly about my anonymity, but you are addressing the United Nations General Assembly in less than 1 hour. I know how much you loathe speeches, so if you require my help, now would be a good time.
Then why don't you give the address? You're the one who got me into this mess in the first place.
Let me hear your opening.
Where's that damn piece of paper? Oh, here it is. Have you seen my...
There on the nightstand.
Thank you. It goes like this. I know many of you are afraid. I know you want answers.
I meant, what is the beginning of your speech?
That is the beginning of my damn speech.
Eugene, you're not talking to cadets at the academy. This is the UN General Assembly. There is protocol. You normally begin by naming everyone. Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, members of the General Assembly, ladies and gentlemen.
Fine, I'll start with that. Then I'll say I know many of you are afraid. I know you want answers.
No, you have to say something profound first, something inspiring.
Something inspiring? There's a giant goddamn robot in the middle of London. What people want is for me to get rid of it. There's nothing profound about that.
Then say something completely unrelated, but profound. The last address I heard in person was from a U.S. president. He said something like, "We come together at a crossroads between war and peace, between disorder and integration, between fear and hope."
Very well, then. Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, members of the General Assembly, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who know me know I am a man of few words. Those who know me well also know how much I loathe speeches. So, with your permission, I will steal my opening remarks from a former president of the United States. He said, "We come together at a crossroads between war and peace, between disorder and integration, between fear and hope."
That is...
I was joking. I have a quote from another fellow who had a better way with words. I can just move it up. After that, you'll have to settle for some words of my own. His name is Thomas Henry Huxley. He was a scientist in the early days of modern biology. He said, "The known is finite, the unknown infinite. Intellectually, we stand on an islet in the midst of an illimitable ocean of inexplicability. Our business in every generation is to reclaim a little more land." Almost a decade ago, when Themis was revealed to the world, we realized that ocean was a lot bigger than we thought. And what transpired this morning in London has made our islet of certainty feel so small that we may wonder if we even have enough room to stand on. Now, can I say it?
I know many of you are afraid.
Don't make fun of me. I know many of you are afraid. I know you want answers. Let me be blunt. I don't have the answers you're looking for. Not today. I also have a confession to make. I am also afraid. I'm afraid because I don't know what that thing is or what it wants. I don't know if there are more coming, and I really don't know if we could do anything about it if there were. There is a lot we don't know. A little bit of fear is only healthy, if you ask me.
How reassuring. I feel better already.
We can't let fear stop us from doing what we must do. We also can't let fear dictate our actions. We must exercise patience. What we've got here...
What are you trying to say?
That everyone should wait before doing something really stupid.
Such as?
You know that there are those in England who want a show of force. I also know that NATO is considering military action of its own. I want everyone in that room to use their influence. I want them to use every means at their disposal to make sure that doesn't happen.
Why?
You know why! This second robot is probably even more powerful than Themis. It's doubtful that British ground forces could put a scratch on it. And this is London. In an urban environment, there is simply no way to concentrate enough firepower with a ground assault. An all-out airstrike has more potential, but we need a joint operation between our biggest air forces. We'd also level the city of London. If that doesn't bring the robot down, a high-yield nuclear bomb would be our best and last option, though it would mean relocating most of England's population after the fact. Is that clear enough for you?
If that is what you want people to leave with, then you should say it like that, in those words. Make them understand there is no best-case scenario if they attack, that they cannot bluff their way out of this.
You don't think it's a little rough? You asked for profound and inspiring.
You open with profound and inspiring so that 20 years from now people can feel clever quoting you around the dinner table. If there is something you want people to understand today, say it like you are addressing your grandchildren. Half the people in that room will hear you through an interpreter, and most have the attention span of a 5-year-old. When they leave the room, these people will call home. They will probably talk to their defense ministers, their top generals, their chiefs of staff, people with an army at their disposal who are itching to use it. You are asking them to trust a group of scientists before their own military advisors. Make sure the reason for that is not lost in translation.
I had another paragraph that made me sound reasonably intelligent.
Let me hear it.
What we've got here is not a London problem. It's not a British or a European problem. It's certainly not a NATO problem. What we've got here is an Earth problem. It's a problem for all of us, for every nation represented in this room, and we must find a solution to it together. This institution was founded in the wake of the most devastating war in human history, to promote peace by allowing nations to resolve their disputes here in this room, and not on the battlefield. It was also created so that we could pool our knowledge and resources and achieve great things none of us could dream of achieving on our own. Today, we have a chance to do both. Prevent war on a level we've never imagined and bring humanity to a whole new frontier. If there has ever been a time for the United Nations, it is now. If there has ever been a reason for the EDC, this is it.
Put that at the end for when they've stopped paying attention. For now, you should talk about your military career so they can relate.
I'll say a few words somewhere. Yeah. I also know many of you have doubts. The decision to create the EDC was not a unanimous one. Why should you trust the EDC and not your own military? That is probably the only question I can answer today. I am a military man, have been for over 40 years. I can tell you this. Military people need intelligence.
You need to say more than that. Tell them about how many wars you've been in, how many people you killed. Make them see the blood. Make them think of you as a warmonger who would drop a bomb on London at the first excuse. Only then will they believe you when you tell them they should not.
What can I say? I am a brigadier general in the South African Army and commander of a UN military force. In South Africa, I was in charge of the Army Armour Formation. That's a hard-to-pronounce way of saying lots of tanks. I fought in a segregated unit during the border wars. I have been part of peacekeeping operations in Sudan. I have led forces for the UN Intervention Brigade in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I have been in one army or the other for all of my adult life.
Perfect.
And I can tell you this. Military people, people like me, need intelligence to be useful. We need to know what's going on. Without intelligence, take my word for it, you do not want your fate in the hands of the military. We do not improvise. We're like an elephant in a china shop. We can make a big mess of things if you have us chasing our tail. I am also the commander of the Earth Defense Corps, technically another military force with a single gigantic weapon. As commander, I have 2 soldiers under my command. Make that 1 soldier. The other is technically a Canadian consultant. I also have 68 scientists working for me. They didn't exactly phrase it like that when they offered me the job because they know I don't like scientists. Scientists are like children. They always want to know everything. They all ask too many questions, and they never follow orders to the letter. That, people, is the EDC. A big robot, 1 soldier, a linguist, and a whole lot of disobedient children. What we need, what the world needs right now, is them, my insubordinate kids. They know more about alien technology than anyone on Earth, and they're learning more every day. That is what they do. They learn things constantly. They claim land for our little island of knowledge so that we can have room to breathe.
Touching.
I remembered the speech you gave me when you tried to sell me this job the first time around.
You said no.
I did, but it was a good speech. And I have a few paragraphs about what we know, mostly about what we don't know.
What do we know?
Not much, is what I have. We've only had a few hours to look at the data that's available, and our people haven't been on site yet, so this is what we know. The figure in London is roughly 10 feet taller than Themis and about 10% more massive. We're calling it Kronos. That's it. The rest is conjecture. There might be no one in that big metal man. It might be remote controlled, it might not even be a robot. It hasn't moved since it arrived. We feel this is rather unlikely, but it's not something we can blindly discard as an option. There might also be humans in there. That would mean another robot was buried somewhere and was discovered by one of the nations represented here today. That also seems unlikely, but not impossible. Given what we know about Themis, the most probable scenario is that there are two or more alien pilots on board, and since the figure in London looks a hell of a lot like Themis, our working assumption at this point is that it was built by the same race. That doesn't necessarily mean that we are dealing with the people who built Themis. They left one giant robot on this planet. It stands to reason they could have done the same thing on another inhabited planet, and it might be these people visiting us. Like I said, we don't know much. Assuming we are in fact dealing with aliens, they might be friendly. They didn't come out guns blazing, that's usually a good sign, and our current theory about Themis is that she was left here for us to defend ourselves. Their intent might very well be hostile. It would be odd for a foe to give us this much time to prepare, but its presence might be a prelude to a full-scale invasion or attack. Another very reasonable explanation, the one we're leaning towards, is that they're still trying to figure us out. They would have no way to know whether we mean them any harm or how we'll react to their presence. But enough speculation. All I can offer you right now is a lot of ifs and maybes. I was asked to come here and make a recommendation. For now, it's a very simple one. Send Themis to England. That will take 7 or 8 days. Make my kids do their job for another week and we'll reconvene. In the meantime, I will ask, implore all of you to exercise restraint and let this process take its course. This is not the time for impulsive action, no matter how tempting it might be. That's it. That's my speech. Is that long enough?
It'll do just fine.
Of course, it didn't help that I had to write a whole new one for the press corps after Rose lost her goddamn mind.
What did she do?
Oh, you missed that? She went on television, told the whole world we shouldn't be involved.
Who is we?
The EDC. She said sending Themis would be our biggest mistake. I know you like her, but you know she hasn't been thinking straight. That girl is hanging on by a really thin thread.
She's been through some unsettling events.
I get that. What I don't get is why you put her in charge. She could have been on the team without running the show, you know. She doesn't like me because I'm the big bad military, but what she's doing really isn't helping. Sending Themis over there is the only way I can buy some time. Without that, there'll be troops in Regent's Park by morning, and we both know how that'll end.
Let me hear it.
What?
What you prepared for the press corps.
Fine. You may have heard the head of our science division, Dr. Rose Franklin, speak to the media this morning. She had a lot to say, but to summarize, Dr. Franklin believes we should do nothing. Send no one, not even the EDC, and hope that the robot eventually leaves of its own accord. Dr. Franklin is a brilliant scientist, and she's certainly entitled to her opinion, even if she doesn't speak for the EDC. As you may know, Dr. Franklin was almost killed in an accident involving Themis in Colorado, and I believe the incident has left her unnecessarily cautious. While I disagree with her conclusion, she did say a lot more than we shouldn't send the EDC. She made a few good points this morning. We're making first contact with an alien species. No matter how it goes, this will be a defining moment in human history. We should all stop for a minute and realize how significant and far-reaching these events are. With that in mind, Dr. Franklin pointed out that sending an armored division and a few thousand armed soldiers is probably not the best way to make a good first impression. I find it hard to disagree. She did suggest that sending Themis would be an even bigger mistake. Tanks and foot soldiers might be perceived as a sign of aggression, but they would most likely pose no serious threat to the robot if it's anything like ours. Themis, on the other hand, could possibly give them a run for their money. I believe that showing the aliens a familiar face might be a good way to open a dialogue, but there is an argument to be made that sending the only thing on this earth that could hurt these guys might not be such a great idea.
Concise. Decisive, yet supportive. I like it. Grab your jacket. It is time to go.
Do you remember what you told me the second time around to get me to take this job?
I do.
You said, I've found you a military post where you never have to kill anyone ever again.
I know. I still intend to keep that promise.
File number 1416. Interview with Captain Kara Resnick, Earth Defense Corps. Location, somewhere in the Atlantic.
Good morning, Ms. Resnick. I hope I did not wake you.
Holy shit! No, I just got out of the shower. I was running laps on top deck. Why does it feel like we haven't talked in a decade?
It has been 8 years since our last conversation. Can you talk?
You mean, can anyone hear me? I doubt it. Vincent's still asleep in his bunk.
I meant, are you busy?
I miss this.
What?
This. No, I'm not busy. I have time to talk.
Where are you?
In the middle of the Atlantic, but you know that already.
I meant on the boat.
In our quarters. We have a little... It's like a very, very small apartment. We have a couch, a TV, kitchenette.
I am pleased to hear that you are comfortable. I requested some amenities when the UN acquired your vessel. I know how much you disliked the previous one.
Oh, it's night and day, sir. The boat we took before was carrying grain. We were like stowaways. This one's been overhauled just for us. It doesn't do anything else. We still sleep in bunk beds, though I'm not sure why that is. How have you been? I bet you're bored out of your mind without us.
Believe it or not, there are things in the world that do not revolve around you. Not many, but enough to keep me reasonably occupied.
I was just asking how you were. I haven't talked to you in 8 years.
You were asking about my personal life?
God, I missed you. Why has it been this long, though? I know you talked to Dr. Franklin a bunch of times.
You and Mr. Couture appeared to be doing well. I did not see the need.
You could have said hi.
Chit-chat requires some form of reciprocity, which I cannot offer. But as I said, I requested some amenities when the UN acquired your vessel.
You mean you thought of me? Once. Some years ago.
Exactly. What was it you called me in Puerto Rico? All mush inside? How is Dr. Franklin doing?
Well, you know, you spoke to her. She's a little darker than she used to be. I thought it would go away after a while, but it's been nearly a decade, so I think that's the new her. We still get along great, me and her, though. She likes Vincent, too. Everyone else, not so much.
She has been through trauma. That is to be expected.
You mean she died? I know. I was there. I killed her. Then she came back 4 years younger. She never told me how she came back. Does she know?
She does not.
Do you?
I do not.
You wouldn't tell me if you did.
Probably not. But I really do not know. And to be accurate, she is only missing 3 years of her life. She was dead for the fourth one.
Remind me never to come to you for reassurance. No wonder she's not coping well. I'm not the one who died and came back, and I'm freaked out. I mean, me and Vincent spent hours with her every day before she died. Who did we spend all that time with?
Dr. Rose Franklin.
Well, that Dr. Franklin died. The Rose Franklin we spend time with now doesn't remember any of it.
I realize how confusing this is. I am as bewildered by the situation as you are. I will provide answers when I have them. May I inquire as to the status of your relationship with Mr. Couture?
Have you been watching us these past few years?
As far as I know, neither you nor Mr. Couture are under surveillance.
How nice! I meant on TV. Do you even know what we've been doing? You weren't kidding when you said it would be mostly parades and photo ops. We spend a couple of hours a day in the lab trying to learn more about Themis. That's 10-15 hours a week tops, and that's when we're in New York. When we're on tour, there's no research whatsoever. The rest of the time is what you said it would be. There aren't many parades. The logistics are just insane. She destroys everything she steps on, even roads. And there aren't many cities willing to deal with the expense and the security. But we sure take a lot of pictures. Human interest, mostly. We visit schools, hospitals. Children's hospitals are the best. Vincent's great with kids. He does the knee thing. That helps. But he's really good with them. We're a circus act.
You must hate every minute of it.
You think I would, right? But I don't. It's a nice routine. We eat well. Hotel rooms are great. Jenny takes good care of us.
Who is Jenny?
The tour manager. She handles our bookings, special requests. Like I said, we're an act. I thought I would quit after a month when we started, but I'm sort of enjoying it. I'm horrible at it, though. They have to record my interviews in advance or have someone ready to bleep half of what I say. Vincent does most of the talking now. I'm not very good with kids, either. They have no sense of irony whatsoever. I made a sick kid cry once. She had leukemia, I think, and I made her cry.
I fail to see what you find enjoyable.
Well, the PR part is bad. If it were just that, it's what comes with it. We work a few hours a day. Jenny thinks she's overworking us, but she doesn't know we used to pull 16-hour shifts in Denver. How do I put this? We travel together. We have lots of time to ourselves. We haven't tried to kill each other yet. I don't know. It feels...
normal?
Yeah, that.
Did you manage to keep Mr. Couture from proposing all this time?
I guess I did. To be honest, I haven't really been trying the past couple years.
What made you change your mind?
Oh, I haven't changed my mind. I just didn't feel the need anymore. I think he's given up on me.
Does it bother you?
Maybe a little. I guess part of me was hoping I would change my mind. I know how much it matters to him. He should be with someone who wants kids as much as he does. I think he finally realized that's not me. Anyway, it doesn't matter now.
What do you mean?
I don't know. We're going over there to face that alien robot. We're back. I'm back. That's how it feels anyway. Am I a horrible person for feeling that way?
You are likely on your way to a quick death at the hands of a superior enemy, and this somehow makes you happy. Horrible is not the first word that comes to mind.
Maybe not happy, more alive. I feel more like myself than I have for a while is what I'm trying to say. Maybe normal isn't for me. Maybe I was trying to be something I'm not.
I do not wish to impede your journey towards self-discovery, but I am reasonably certain that there are ways of being yourself that do not require a global crisis. Did you consider the possibility that you might simply be scared at the prospect of a family?
Let me think. No, I haven't considered that. But enough about me. Let's talk about you. Good. Now, can you tell me anything new about that big alien fellow? Dr. Franklin told us he's bigger than our girl, but that's about all we know.
I just left an EDC briefing. Dr. Franklin and her team are still gathering data. There is nothing new to report.
Has it moved?
It has not. Its light output is also stable. It does not appear to be receiving or emitting any signal.
So what are we supposed to do? Just walk up to him and shake his big alien hand?
It might be as simple as that. For now, you will land at the London Gateway port and assemble in the clearing behind it. There, you will await instructions. Hopefully, we will know more by then. I do not wish to appear pessimistic, but I would like to know more about your combat readiness in the event a conflict should arise. Dr. Franklin tells me you have discovered how to trigger an energy discharge and focus it.
Yes, we knew we could trigger the discharge. That's how we destroyed the lab in Denver. We just had to figure out what buttons Vincent fell on. The rest we found by accident. Turns out if you release the burst with the sword on, it comes out of it. The bigger the sword, the more focused the beam is. In New York, we train on the shores near New Rochelle and shoot at the water. The blast makes a hole about the size of a city block, then it fills up again. It's pretty cool to watch. We also tried on something solid, made a fairly large rock disappear. I can't tell you if our weapon would work against that robot, but it'll wipe anything of this world off it. You know Dr. Franklin thinks going to London is a bad idea.
I do.
Well, what she said made more sense to me than anything else I've heard. We assume we were supposed to find Themis, but say it wasn't the case. Say they came here to get it back, destroy it, whatever. More to the point, there's nothing you can put in front of that robot that would pose any serious threat to it, except maybe us. Do we really want to make first contact with an alien species by sending the only thing we have, which isn't even ours, that it could see as a menace? I'm just asking. I'm a soldier, so if they tell me to walk up behind it and kick it in the butt, I will. But if we can avoid the whole me and Vincent dying thing, you know, that'd be good.
I sympathize. What you must understand is that the powers that be will not let that alien robot sit in the middle of the most populous city in the UK much longer without doing anything. At some point, human nature will take over and they will send something. If that something is not Themis, who, by the way, is also the only thing that might seem familiar to this new robot, it will be His Majesty's Armed Forces. If I have to choose between the two, I would rather send you.
Isn't there anything we can send that doesn't have weapons attached to it? Something cute and fuzzy. Send Barney or a bunch of kittens. Did you see Close Encounters of the Third Kind? We can play keyboards to it. Do a light show. Teach these guys some sign language.
The British government is ahead of you on this one, though your ideas are remarkably similar. They have initiated what they call First Contact Protocol.
Do I want to know?
They have installed screens around the park and are showing pictures of monuments, animal species, cities, some clips from old movies. They are playing music from the 50s and 60s on a speaker system.
Why the old stuff? What's wrong with new music?
I believe the rationale behind it is that any signals that made it far enough for an alien species to pick up would have left Earth a long time ago.
So they won't be disappointed if they came here for Elvis?
Creating familiarity is indeed the intent. It does feel a little improvised, but you have to understand that scientists believed that finding alien life would mean microbes, or an overly regular radio signal, nothing like what we are faced with today. I realize how futile this all may seem, but at the very least it does not hinder our efforts, and it makes it appear as if the government is doing something.
So what's the best case scenario here? They like the British light show, they exit the robot, and they stay for dinner?
I believe that, secretly or not, everyone is hoping they will simply leave. If they do not, then we hope that they will be the ones to initiate a dialogue and dictate the terms of our mutual discovery. Given their obvious technological superiority, it would seem like the most logical and safest course of action.
Why would they travel all this way only to leave after a couple of days?
Interestingly enough, it is probably what we would do. At least it is what we would have done half a century ago. It might be an urban legend, but I was told that in the 50s, the U.S. military started thinking about what it would do if we encountered sentient alien life. They came up with a 7-step procedure, starting with remote surveillance. We would then secretly visit the alien world, and if we felt our weaponry and technology to be more advanced than the aliens, we would begin a series of brief landings, during which we would gather samples of plant and animal life, perhaps abducting an alien or two in the process. After that, we would make our existence known to as many aliens as possible, and if we were satisfied with their reaction, we would make contact.
And if we felt the aliens were superior? What was the plan?
Pray that they do not see us as food.
File number 1422. Personal Journal Entry. Dr. Rose Franklin, Head of Science Division, Earth Defense Corps.
This is what I was afraid of. This is why I wish I had never found Themis. They're here. Her family's here now. Maybe they came to take her home. I wish they would. I wish they'd take me with them. Leave the world as it should be. Even if I stay behind, I do hope they simply leave, because whatever they choose to do, there isn't anything we can do to stop them. That robot, we named him Kronos, could be 6,000 years more advanced than Themis. Assuming that our societies followed a similar evolutionary path, their technological capabilities would have increased exponentially as well. We invented more things in the last 100 years than we did in the previous 1,000, and we're likely to invent more than that in the next 10 years. Technology might plateau at some point and evolve more slowly, but I can't even begin to imagine what 6,000 years of technological progress might mean for people this advanced. I mean that literally. I can't imagine it. To say that Themis might be antiquated is such an understatement. She might be the equivalent of a wooden toy for the robot in London. I'd like to keep her as far from there as I can for as long as I can. Unfortunately, that may not be very long. I suggested evacuating the area and waiting 6 months before we attempt anything. If these aliens want to make contact, let them do it. More importantly, don't force them to if that's not what they're here for. Eugene, he would kill me if he heard me call him by his first name, made it very clear to me that the British government doesn't have that kind of patience. I like Eugene. He's a self-righteous 60-year-old general with all the open-mindedness you'd expect from a self-righteous 60-year-old general. But Eugene hates war. He's seen enough death for a dozen lifetimes, and I trust him to do the right thing. The right thing might indeed be to send Themis, if the alternative is the army. They may not speak any of our languages, but I'm sure they know the meaning of 10,000 men with guns. If there is one aspect of our report that should have been clear, it's the section on defensive capabilities. I can't fathom why they would even consider sending troops when the only thing we can say with some degree of certainty is that our weapons would have little or no effect on the robot. And since this robot is bound to be at least as powerful as Themis, it could obliterate any army in a few seconds. Why would anyone want to face that robot? They would at best simply be ignored, and at worst, die a completely meaningless death before they ever realize what's happening. I am curious, however, as to how that robot made it to London. Witnesses said it didn't even make a sound, just appeared out of thin air. For years now, we've been looking for a propulsion system, in part because Alyssa thought there might be one, mostly because it would be really convenient. We always assumed it would be just that, a propulsion system, some sort of jetpack that Themis could use to fly. We didn't find anything, so we looked for commands that would resemble throttle, pitch, yaw, hoping some flames would come out of her feet. But what if it's not propulsion? If Themis can indeed travel long distances, she might do it in much the same way that robot made it to London. If she can just beam herself wherever she wants to go, the commands would look completely different. It might be as simple as entering a set of coordinates and punching go. Of course, I have no idea how such a coordinate system might work, but I'm sure Vincent will be excited to try to figure it out if he gets the chance. I don't think Kara and Vincent would last very long against that machine. And if Themis is destroyed, it will surely be the beginning of the end for all of us. I sincerely hope I'm wrong. I hope a hatch opens on that robot and lets out happy, oddly legged aliens who just want to hug everybody. Everyone at the EDC is so excited about making first contact. I try my best to hide my pessimism. They already think I'm on the verge of depression. They'll start medicating me if I tell them how I truly feel. But I can't shake the feeling that something horrible is about to happen. Who knows? I might be in desperate need of medication. Believing you're the only person with their head on straight is usually not a sign of good mental health. Signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. That's what they said I should be looking for. I wish that can be treated. I'm afraid there's only one cure for what I have.
File number 1427. House of Commons Debates. Parliament of the United Kingdom. Wednesday, 6 December. The House met at 11:30.
Prayers. Mr. Speaker in the chair. Points of order. 6th of December. Column 1325. Daniel Stewart, Rutland and Melton, Liberal Democrat.
On a point of order, Mr. Speaker. On Monday, in questions to the Prime Minister about municipal response to the alien occupation of Regent's Park, I described a certain London official in very unfavourable terms and made accusatory remarks that went well beyond my meaning. That city official and my right honourable friend, the member for Ealing Southall, Sir Charles Duncan, in whose constituency the gentleman resides, have made fervent requests for a retraction. In my attempt to convey just how anxious and concerned I was, I clearly used language that was inappropriate and unfit. I wish to offer an apology and publicly withdraw those remarks.
Mr. Speaker.
I thank the Right Honourable Member for this display of civility. The House is satisfied.
Sir Charles Duncan, Ealing, Southall, Labour.
Further to that point of order, Mr. Speaker, I am also grateful to the Right Honourable Member for Rutland and Melton, Daniel Stewart, for his fulsome retraction.
Mr. Speaker.
Honour is served.
6th of December, column 1326. Sir Robert Johnson, North East Hertfordshire, Conservative.
On a point of order, Mr. Speaker, I seek your guidance. Yesterday, column 654 in Hansard, I intervened on the Secretary of State for Defence, Alex Dunn, to ask him to confirm NATO's position on our London predicament. He assured us that NATO was supportive of our non-intervention policy, yet in Paris that same afternoon, his French counterpart, Minister Poupart, said, Si Londres ne tient pas tête à cet envahisseur, la France, l'OTAN, ou le monde devra s'en charger. Loosely translated, if London does nothing to confront this invader, France, NATO, or the world will. Would the Defence Secretary like to amend his previous answer to put the record straight?
Mr. Speaker.
I am grateful to the honourable and learned gentleman for his translation, and equally impressed with his mastery of La Langue de Molière. I am sure that the honourable and learned gentleman has the best interests of this nation at heart, but I am asked whether the Defence Secretary would like to amend his answer based on the French Minister's comments. While it would be presumptuous of me to speak on behalf of the Secretary, I can say with some certitude that Minister Poupart does not speak for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and with even more confidence that he does not serve in any official capacity as representative of the world. As for France, the Premier Ministre, loosely translated the Prime Minister, said this morning that Minister Poupart's statement was a figure of speech meant to convey the Minister's disquietude, and that the French government deferred to the sovereignty of the United Kingdom on the matter. The Defence Secretary should thus feel no need to amend his answer, as the record appears to be perfectly straight. Let us move on to the business at hand.
12:14 p.m. Business of the House, today. 6th of December, column 1327. London evacuation and safety. Motion for leave to bring in a bill, standing order number 23. Deborah Horsburgh, Lewisham, Deptford, Conservative.
I beg to move that leave be given to bring in a bill to require the Secretary of State for Defence to order the evacuation of the area surrounding Regent's Park and to deploy the Household Cavalry Regiment. Tomorrow marks